The first case is 03210010-CV, Lampasas Independent School District versus Mike Morath, the Honorable Commissioner of Education for the State of Texas, Bell Pass, Inc., and Coppers Cove Independent School District. This matter is being recorded and shown live via YouTube. This hearing is being conducted in a hybrid fashion, meaning some folks are here in the court in person. However, we're also making the hearing available via our YouTube channel because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Those who are appearing here live in the court are seated in a socially distanced fashion and are wearing masks unless they're speaking. This is in accordance with our local rules associated with oral hearings post-pandemic. Since there's limited seating in the courtroom and to make this matter accessible to the public, we're also streaming the matter via YouTube. The video broadcast, however, will not be available after this proceeding. It is only available while the proceeding is going on. However, this afternoon, the audio recording of this proceeding will be made available on the court's website. For those new to the third court, each side is allocated 20 minutes to argue, and Mr. Kyle, our court clerk, has already coordinated with the attorneys on the time allotments desired for this particular proceeding. And as you know, we typically reserve time at the end for the appellant's rebuttal. Therefore, LISD will have 15 minutes to argue their case, and then I believe the appellees are splitting their 20-minute time between Morath and then Coppers Cove and Bell Pass, 10 minutes and 10 minutes, and then the rebuttal for LISD will be 5. We do have a time warning system right in front of me here today that will assist the attorneys in wrapping up and concluding their argument. When the yellow light comes on, there'll be a remaining 2 minutes to wrap up the argument. When the red light comes on, I would ask that you rapidly close down your final thought. The court may decide to provide you with additional time in your argument to follow up or conclude a thought, but that'll be at the court's discretion. And Mr. Kyle, do we have anyone to assist with regard to cleaning the podium today? Ah, okay, wonderful, wonderful. So, councils, before you come back up, our third court staff will clean the podium before the next speaker comes up. So if you'll just pause a moment, we'll try to keep everybody safe and free from any illnesses as you leave the third court today. At this point, I'd like to call for ready announcements from the attorneys in the case of 03210CV LISD versus Morath et al. Councils, please state your name and introduce yourself to the court.
Your Honor, I'm David Hanson, here on behalf of the Lampasas Independent School District and Bureau of Ed.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'm William C. Bednar, and I represent Bell Pass and Coppers Cove.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, ma'am. It's a pleasure. So now, Mr. Hanson, please approach the podium and you can proceed.
This case started at 8D classes.
Okay. That's okay. Take your time. Yes, sir.
May it please the court.
Certainly.
Your Honor, we're coming here today to request a definitive interpretation from the Court of Appeals on Texas Education Code Section 7.057 to include 7.057B and, by extension, C, given that the operative language that we'll be discussing today is relevant to both. what the case is really about is whether or not the commissioner is required to comply with any of the requirements and restrictions set forth in that statute, or whether or not the commissioner may treat the requirements and prohibitions within the statute as merely directory in nature. So in the first point, what we're going to discuss is the prohibition that's contained within 7.057 against B of the Texas Education Code, against conducting proceedings after the expiration of 180 days from the date of an appeal. And the reason for that is that an appeal, and you've read the brief, so this is related to a detachment and annexation proceeding. And so in a detachment and annexation proceeding, an appeal is de novo and requires a hearing. And so there's a special rule for those types of proceedings within 7.057. So what we're asking the court for is to interpret the statute as mandatory. If the court agrees with us, then a proceeding will be done when the legislature said it was supposed to be done and not after. So in that case, a final order will be issued 180 days from the appeal, and then the parties may proceed to the courts however they wish to proceed. If the court does not agree with that interpretation, that it's mandatory, then there will be the possibility of cases like this, which began in 2016 in a detachment annexation with the detachment annexation petition. The second point that I'd like to talk about is whether or not the commissioner of the state has any restriction with regard to its jurisdiction in detachment annexation proceedings, and whether it may treat or whether it may act in the place of a local school district to deny a petition, to take action on a petition for detachment annexation that's filed where there's no authority to do so within that statute. So in this case, we came before the commissioner, and the commissioner did not make a determination on jurisdiction until approximately 2 years after the case was filed, after the date of appeal in the final decision, did not conduct the hearing on the jurisdictional issue until September 25th of 2017, a full 476 days after the petition was filed. So after the date of the appeal to the commissioner. So the question there is whether or not the commissioner can use a proceeding, which was to have taken place within 180 days or not after, to create a finding and deem a petition denied by a local school district, thereby ratifying the entire proceeding and enlarging the authority of the commissioner through the proceeding.
Can I ask counsel that you address, what was the commissioner's alternative when the school board chose not to decide?
The statute does not, the statute doesn't have the authority to do that, or doesn't give the commissioner the authority to do that. But what you're discussing is the potential, if there was a belief that the school district had failed to comply with a mandatory duty, in violation of the statute, there is a proceeding for that. And petitions could have sought before the commissioner a determination that the school district acted illegally. And that would have been done under a substantial evidence review. They could file the grievance, or after Solis, they could have not filed the grievance and come to the court come to the commissioner and said, there's a violation. The commissioner then would have been in a position to make a determination as to whether or not the district had violated the law In that case, as it turned out through this proceeding, the commissioner would have learned that there was a very good reason for that, had they just followed the process, and that was that the school district hadn't been served, hadn't been given the petition that was approved. And so, hence, there was no, you know, later on, we talked, there's no split decision, but the determination by the commission.
I'm sorry, hadn't been given which petition approved by.
Let me go ahead and, so in 2016, January 22nd, the Lampasas Independent School District received a petition for detachment annexation from Bell Pass. And in that petition, which was a verified petition, it said that the affected territory was 348.55 acres. And so an affected territory just means that here's the area that we're going to detach.
We understand that, and we understand that at Copper's Cove it was the 335. The question I have is, why did the Lampasas Independent School District not rule on the petition that they had in front of them? Why did they keep on putting it on one board meeting and the next board meeting and never rule?
It was a nullity. It was a nullity when they created another petition that created a different description of the affected territory. And so they had a 335-acre description in the CCISD area.
Did did Lampasas ever tell Valpass that, by the way, you have two different petitions?
We told them that during these proceedings, yes.
Can you tell me in the record, is there anything in the record that shows me that the independent school, that Lampasas told them that you have messed this up, you have 348 here, 335 there?
I misunderstood your question. Before these proceedings, I don't think there's anything in the record that says that sometime, you know, between the time that that they filed a lawsuit against the school district and the time they filed the petition, that there was this error. And there isn't an obligation to do that under the statute. So so the answer to the question is, there is nothing in the record before this proceeding that would indicate that.
And I'm sorry, and so your position is that the school district, a governmental unit, can kind of play gotcha and say, oh, I see that your application has a problem, but I have no duty to tell you that your application has a problem. I just can just hold on to it infinitum without ever saying there's something wrong?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying there's no obligation to do that, and that is it. The burden is on this person seeking to move property from one area to another to bring that proceeding in accordance with the statute.
And what is your basis for saying that the petition that was pending in front of LISD was a nullity? It was wrong, obviously, but you know, that's their problem. You could have made a decision on it. Copper's Cove could have made their decision. You're not worried about being served with Copper's Cove's petition.
Well,
and then they've got two different petitions, neither of which are the same property, so then it's still a mess.
It would still be a mess because Copper's Cove never acted on the petition that we received. So you would still not have a dual, a split decision. So if since Copper's Cove never acted on the petition we received, no school district approved it. And so you've reviewed the statute, so there's three possibilities that happen. If both school districts approve a petition for a detachment annexation, then there's no appeal to the commissioner. What's to appeal? If both school districts deny a petition for detachment and annexation, again, there's no appeal to the commissioner. And so it's required that there be a split decision. Whereas here you have this mess that was one completely caused by the failure to seriously contemplate the area that was going to be detached and annexation by the person seeking it.
Mr. Hansen, do you agree with the appellees that the only difference between the 348.55 petition and the 335 petition is just is just a typographical error? It's just in one place, not in the description of the property that was attached to the petition.
Your Honor, I'd say a typographical error is a misspelling. This is a this is the most important part of the petition. This in a detachment and annexation hearing. Where is the land that is going to be moved from one place to another?
But is that, my question is the description the same in both documents other than?
So to answer your question, the difference is that in the verified portion of the petition, they swear the affected territory is one area, but they attached a document which is a sketch and field notes based on the sketch. It's not sealed, it's not verified, it's nothing. And they just reference it, but they make the affirmative statement that 348 acres is the area to be detached and annexed in ours, and that 335 is the area to be detached and annexed.
So the answer to Justice Kelly's question is yes. The only difference between the two petitions in Coppers Cove and Lampasas is one number says 348 and whatever, and one says 335. Is that accurate?
It's not the only difference. There were other attachments that were attached to the CCISD petition that were not attached to ours. But it is the difference that brings us here today. And it's the most important difference. Because what we've learned is that within the 348 acres, there are people living there. That's in the record. There are other people who own property there. And so shouldn't they know that we're here today deciding whether they're going to go to Coppers Cove ISD or to Lampasas ISD? Isn't that the obligation of that school district to ensure that there is clarity there? The fact that later on they purport to have carved out some area is another matter. But as far as the petition that the district had, it said 348 acres.
And can you clarify something for me? In February of 2016, did the board hear the original or the amended?
It heard on the petition that it had was the 348, the 348 petition.
Both of them said 348, but there was an amended one.
So that's it. So they kept calling it the first amended petition, right? So just to take a square one, December of 2015, both school districts did receive the same petition. Same description, everything, 348 acres.
Exactly.
On January 22nd, 8 days before the hearing was to take place in Lampasas, they created and delivered to the district one that also said 348 acres.
Correct.
But it had that other attachment. 4 days after that, they created the new petition, the 335 petition that says 335 and swears to it, and they delivered it only to CCISD.
Understand that. My question is, do you know the hearing that they had on the petition, was it a hearing on the amended? They both said 348. Was it the original petition or the amended? Do you know that?
Well, in the record, it shows that the only one that had been there in time for which we could give notice under the law was the previous, was December.
Okay.
That's the only one it could have been.
Okay.
You have to give more than 8 days notice that you're going to detach and annex property. So, but the record, we have that entered into the record.
And I see your time is running down, so I want to give you the courtesy of being able to wrap up your thoughts, counsel.
It's a question about one person's land and a lot of people's interest. And it is a question that should or shouldn't have come before the commissioner. But when it did, the questions about the area of land, the only evidence in the record was that there was approximately 254 acres owned by Belpass. And they were the sole requester for detachment and annexation. So where is it? We don't know after this hearing. And that is as good a proof as any that the district was absolutely correct in
distrusting the original petition for its lack of care in describing affected territory. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll hear from you in rebuttal, counsel. Yes. Thank you very much. And if you'll bear with us just a moment as we clean the podium, counsel, if you'll bear with us just a moment. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. And now for Mr. Bednar, you may approach counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Bill Bednar, and I'm here representing the petitioner, Bell Pass, and the Coppice Cove Independent School District.
Yes, sir.
I thought I'd take a moment or two to orient the court on a map. This is a larger version of Petitioner's Exhibit 1, which is in evidence. And I just wanted to... Here we go. Orient the court. This is the city of Coppice Cove right here. And this little red spot here is the affected territory. Fort Hood headquarters is right over here, and the town of Lampasas is over here. The extraterritorial, the city limits of the boundary line between the two school districts is the county line, which runs right straight down here. The affected territory is contiguous to it. And the idea here, of course, was to develop some modernly priced homes for as a bedroom community for Fort Hood. That's what the development objective here was. And the distance over here, that it's not shown on the map, but there is a large four-lane Highway 290, that connects Fort Hood and Coppice Cove and Lampasas. And then there is a network of county roads in here that are used by the school buses and picking up and dropping off children, which are not shown on the map. But the extraterritorial jurisdiction of the extraterritorial jurisdiction of the city extends out about to here. The extraterritorial jurisdiction of the city of Lampasas is roughly like this. The high school in Lampasas is about 19 miles away. The middle school is about 18 miles away. There's one elementary school that's 25 miles away. Another one that's about 18. And then there is the Taylor Creek Elementary School, which is just a little over 2.5 miles from the affected territory, which Lampasas was built several years ago. But we believe has been a capacity since it was built. Now, we say we believe because we had a lot of resistance to discovery in this case. We had to find out for sure, but Dr. Harder's report, which is and evidence details the reasons why it looks very strongly like Taylor Creek is in full.
Mr. Bednar, I'm going to interrupt you a little bit because we're not here to decide the merits of whether, you know, this piece of property.
Of course, to the basic layout of the ground.
I appreciate that. Can I ask you a question? And I'm going to kind of pick up where Mr. Hansen left off. Do we have in front of us what the property is, specifically the property that we're trying, that y'all are trying to move from Lampasas to Coppice Cove ISD?
Yes, Your Honor. It's attached to Petitioner's Exhibit 3.
Okay.
And at the hearing on the merits in September, a couple of years ago, the the Mr. Atkinson, who is the president of Belfast, testified that Belfast owned all of the property within that territory, and that it was unoccupied. It was probably a good opportunity to address the contention made by Lampasas that somehow or other there are people living in this territory. There aren't any. About 12 acres, a little over 12 acres, was cut out of the original affected territory by the amended petition, which was filed in January of 2016. And at that time, both the 12 acres and the affected territory that remained were both vacant. The business reason for cutting that acreage out was so that Mr. Atkinson could sell it and develop it. And so, yes, by the time years later that we got to the Texas Education Agency and to the point of evidence, yes, there were people living in those 12 acres that were cut out of the petition, but there aren't any. The territory that is involved in this case doesn't have any residents.
Can I ask you a question? Where in the record can we find the original petition that was filed with Copperas Cove ISD?
I believe that that petition is Exhibit 4, but I'd have to check.
And can you, you know, I'm going to press you like I did Mr. Hansen, on why they didn't give y'all a hearing. Why didn't Belfast file an accurate petition? Once that you figured out that the 348 was incorrect, why didn't you amend your petition to put the 335?
Well, frankly, we didn't notice it until we were already at the agency. If we had noticed at the time we filed it, of course we would have corrected it. It's that classic computer error where you use a previous version of Word and you miss changing a number, and that's what happened here. And we did our best to correct it when we discovered it, but by that time we were already at the agency.
Mr. Bednar, why should no action by the school district be construed as a denial?
Why should it be construed as a denial?
Yes.
Well, I think that the commissioner is correct that this is a public proceeding to determine where a school district boundary ought to be located, best located for the education of children. Lampasas doesn't have any proprietary rights to this territory. This is a case in the public interest. And for the school district simply to be able by inaction to deprive the agency of any jurisdiction essentially eviscerates the statute.
Could you interpret no action like not as a denial but as an acceptance? You know, you haven't acted on it, you haven't spoken on it, so we interpret it that you have accepted this petition and agree with it. The reverse of a denial.
I'm sorry, I had a little bit of...
Sure, why not interpret no action like an acceptance rather than a denial of the petition?
Because jurisdiction under the statute depends upon one school district approving and the other school district disapproving the petition. That's the statutory language involved. As the court can well imagine, this is a nightmare of a statute. It's been in existence for almost 100 years now, since 1929. It's been amended many times over the years, but it's very, very difficult to get these cases. There are formulas to satisfy, and it takes a very meticulous approach even to get these things litigated. The commissioner, I think, took the view correctly in our view that if we can't accept jurisdiction over this somehow by deeming this petition denied or disapproved, then that just leaves everybody in limbo.
Do you agree with the appellee, and I note that we're running out of your time, the appellate, that you had a different path? You could have gone to the commissioner seeking a requirement, a mandamus to the school board, saying, school board, you must act because you're violating the laws of the state by not act, the school laws of the state by not acting, and you're not acting within a reasonable time, and that being the more appropriate as opposed to going to the merits as you did to the commissioner.
Well, first, I'm not aware that the commissioner has any mandamus authority. The court has that. That's why we went up to Lampasas County. The court will have to understand that this is an unprecedented situation. I've been doing these detachment and annexation cases for nearly 40 years. This is the first time in the recorded history of the statute or the cases construing it, either at the commissioner or in the courts, where our school district has simply refused to act.
That's one reason why we're here today.
There are two other cases sort of like it, but not a situation where the court was just absolutely, where the school district was just absolutely stonewalling.
And let you wrap up your thoughts.
You've got another question?
Go ahead.
So, Ms. Bernard, I understand that Bellpass filed for a mandamus and an injunction in Lampasas County. What happened to that? What was the communication between the court and y'all? Because maybe the commissioner doesn't have power for mandamus, but the trial court sure does have a power of mandamus.
At our last hearing in Lampasas County, the judge from the bench made it very clear that although he might felt like the commissioner had primary jurisdiction here, and then we ought to go to the commissioner and exhaust our administrative remedies. He said that the court said that if that proved unsuccessful, that come back to the courthouse. So we filed a motion to obey. We amended our petition and filed a motion to obey, and it's still on file in Lampasas County, but it's been abated for all these many years, and essentially at this point is a dead letter.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Bednar. Let's get to your co-counsel. Thank you, sir.
There's one other point that I hope I can make, and that is it's a quirk of the statute, and that is our prayer for relief. We are praying for not only an affirmance of the commissioner's decision, but also a remand to the district court for the setting of an effective date if the court does affirm the commissioner. That's something that is required by the statute. The wording is not precisely clear as far as the Court of Appeals is concerned, but this is what we've always done. If there's an appellate ruling that grants the detachment, it needs to go back to the district court for the setting of effective date, which can be done there in light of the present circumstances better than it can up here.
So all right.
That was the only other point I wanted to make to
Thank
make sure
you.
The court was aware of that requirement.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Your
Thank
Honor.
You. Absolutely. And if you'll bear with us, Ms. Glasner, we'll clean the podium one more time. Thank you, ma'am. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Robin Glasner, and I represent TEA Commissioner Mike Morath. And there is one constant in this case, and that is LISD's consistent failure to act. LISD wants this court to reward it for picking and choosing when it may follow applicable statutes and rules. And there are two main issues before the court today. One is, did the commissioner have jurisdiction to hear Bill Tass's petition for review? And two, was the commissioner's order supported by substantial evidence in the record? The answer to both questions is yes. Therefore, I urge the court to affirm the district court's order.
And where in the record is the support for the various grounds, the social, economic, and educational effects that must be found in the record? Where is the substantial evidence related to that, or is it simply deemed as a sanction?
So during the hearing on the merits in front of the ALJ, there was substantial evidence that was provided by Bell Pass in the form of an expert report and testimony that had that laid out the evidence for those factors that are within the statute, the educational interests of the students in the affected territory and districts. So students that were there right now, which there are no students, so that was deemed neutral. The social and educational factors were both substantial evidence was in the record to find that both of those were in favor of Bell Pass, even though those were the two that factors that were deemed based on sanctions. But there was substantial evidence in the record that was given to find for those two factors anyways. The social being the location of the schools, the amount of time it would take not just for the children to get to school, but also the participation of parents and teachers within the community. And that was all found in favor of Bell Pass, which also went to the educational again. The amount of time the students would spend on the bus was much larger for LISD than it would be for Copper's Cove. And then the economic factor was deemed neutral because the amount of tax revenue right now with the undeveloped land would be offset by any additional costs that the district would get with more students. And all of that is in the record.
And Ms. Glassner, in reading a recent Supreme Court opinion, the Davis versus Morath case, I want to read this note 7 because it really does seem like it's on all fours related to this case. Note 7 says, of course, if a party attempted to appeal to the commissioner without having obtained a decision from the school district at all, the commissioner might argue that such a de novo proceeding is not within the commissioner's appellate jurisdiction because there is no local decision that the party may appeal. Supreme Court didn't address that in that particular case, Davis versus Morath, 624 Southwest 3rd, 215. However, that seems exactly what the commissioner is asking us to do today, but taking the opposite view, saying LISD made no decision. I'm not saying I don't have jurisdiction, I'm saying I do. So it's really telling that the Supreme Court in this year issued this opinion with this footnote. So any response to that footnote as it relates to the commissioner's position in this case?
So in this case, under the statute, it's 13.051. It specifically states that you have to have a disparagement between the boards in order to have a de novo review by the commissioner. And in bringing it back to what Mr. Hansen had argued before, 7.057, which allows for appellate review for the commissioner, if we were to even follow that line, in line with what the Supreme Court already had, we would actually then have to go back to 13.051 to see that it would have to be a de novo review because that's what is in control of a petition for detachment annexation case. So we would, if we had started that substantial evidence review, seeing that there, wasn't, based on what appears in the record between both school districts, then you'd still have to go back to the detachment and annexation, which does give the commissioner jurisdiction. And it says specifically de novo review, which I think then would make it different from that Davis case because that was not a petition for detachment annexation. And furthering on the point of jurisdiction, so the commissioner had found in his order that because the statute the detachment annexation statute does require there to be a hearing and then findings made. LISD's inaction would then have to be construed as a constructive no, so that the entire statute could be given effect as required by the Construction Act. And the commissioner found in his order that further trying to send that case back to the district, you know, sending it back to LISD would be futile. And that is a finding that he made in his order.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Mm-hmm. So, you know, 7057 says that a person may appeal in writing actions or decisions. What is the action or decision that triggers the commissioner's appellate jurisdiction here?
So I think it would be that the board had received the amended petition, set it for a hearing, had the hearing, and we now had this floating issue. And in order to give effect to the statute, the commissioner reviewed the case and determined that he acquired jurisdiction because of the inaction.
So the inaction is the action, is what you're arguing.
And do you agree with the appellate that when Bell Pass abated their case pending in Lampasas County District Court, do you believe that the commissioner had the authority at that time, had they gone to the commissioner saying, issue a mandamus mandating LISD to make a decision so we can move forward? Or is your position the commissioner doesn't have mandamus authority at all? And so the only thing we could do was go to the merits. We could only deem it denied, and we had to go to the merits.
And I would say that the commissioner does not have authority to mandamus an action by the board. This is also a case of first impression. The commissioner acknowledged that in his order. This concept of a board having a hearing and then not ever making rulings or findings is brand new. So I do think that under what's in the order, it clearly states that the commissioner thought trying to do anything else would be futile. I don't think he had authority to try a mandamus.
Hmm. Okay, all right. And counsel, I see we're wrapping up your last 2 minutes. I want to make sure you get to do some of your argument. Okay.
So to wrap up real quick, we do believe that there is more than enough substantial evidence in the record to find that, one, that the commissioner did have jurisdiction in this case, and two, that there was substantial evidence to support that all the four factors for that the commissioner needed to look at for determining whether or not a property should be detached and annexed was met in this case. And to wrap up some of the issues that were kind of left. In the commissioner's order, to wrap up one kind of weird question that might be remaining, he specifically finds that the amended petitions that were given, so the ones that were given to both Lampasas and CCISD in January, that those contained full meets and bounds descriptions, which is specifically what the statute requires. So the commissioner's order also found that if there was a typographical error or a conforming error in the petitions between one and the other, it doesn't make it, that's not the controlling factor. The petitions were substantially the same, except for this one typo. In addition, the attachments that were attached, which are the meets and bounds, that's what's controlling, that's what the statute says. If the meets and bounds are attached and a reasonable person could understand where that property is, then that's all that is required. And that was all found in the commissioner's order, and they were the same in both petitions.
And are you seeking the same relief as Mr. Bednar?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. And if you'll bear with us just a moment, Mr. Hansen, we'll clean the podium one last time. Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Hanson, you may proceed.
I'd like to address 2 points and then get to the final portion. The two points are that there is no evidence in the record of 335 acres of affected territory. The attachments to the petitions were just that. They were not entered in evidence. Exhibit P3, which I believe is the exhibit which was not approved by CCISD, is in there. However, the question there is, when you have it's not a question, the Supreme Court's spoken on this, and I communicate this with the trial court, is that when you have a document that contains contradictory, it says, if the averments are inconsistent and thus contradict and falsify themselves, they cannot be susceptible of proof. And that's Berry versus Screwman's, 67 text 250. And what that just means is that if you have one part of the petition that says 348 acres and another part that says 335, they cannot both be true, and thus they are not evidence of either. So I just wanted to be clear on that. There was no expert testimony given at the hearing. The hearing that was referred to was a sanctions hearing, which of course was conducted after the deadline for the commissioner to have ruled in this case. And so, and that was a hearing at which the merits were not being discussed, determined. The merits hearing was on September 25th, 2017, or 2018, sorry. Okay, so what you're being asked to do is to allow the commissioner to achieve jurisdiction through pragmatism. What seems to make the most sense? That's not how jurisdiction is defined by the legislature. If we allowed people to do that, then, or if we allowed anybody to do that, the legislative enactment itself means nothing. And so what we have here is there was a process. The question of mandamus, perhaps I wasn't as clear. In the proceeding, on a claim that we violated by our inaction some act, there is a process, and that's set up by legislative enactment. The commissioner isn't free to disregard that legislative enactment, and so which is exactly what they're seeking to do. And so had the commissioner doesn't have mandamus authority, they can issue a decision and issue an order. We could have appealed it. The court does have the authority to order that. So it doesn't nullify. Just because it's not convenient or fast, it doesn't nullify the process, which is what they're suggesting. And this is exactly the thing that this entire case suffers from, is the attempt to speed things along rather than do things correctly and in accordance with the written, with the law. We didn't bother to see whether or not the school district violated a law. Instead, we incorporated into a proceeding and then in that proceeding made a finding that the school district violated the law and deemed a finding in that regard. So it's extremely dangerous to do that, because this isn't just about detachment annexation. I realize it hardly ever comes up, but this is a general applicable statute that'll apply to teachers, to students, to employees, to everyone. And if the commissioner can just decide he's got jurisdiction for expedience and skip the requirement that complaints be brought, of violations of law be brought to the commissioner, which they are allowed to do.
Mr. Hanson, yes. The appellees use the Railroad Commission versus Fort Worth case to analogize the use of, you know, we should interpret shall like must from in that case. Why shouldn't we interpret shall like must shall, in this case?
It shall, because the must has a different definition under the Code Construction Act. Must is a condition precedent, as this court discussed in Morath. Shall is mandatory. It's a duty. In this shall, there is an explicit prohibition against action after 180 days. So even if it weren't for the Code Construction Act, which was enacted in 1997, and the addition by the commissioner in 2000 or by the legislature in 2009 of this deadline to say you can't do this after 180 days, you can't conduct a hearing after 180 days or issue an order after 180 days. This even satisfies the Chisholm case, which says that if you have a time for doing something and then the statute says you can't do something after the time expires, then it's mandatory, not directory.
And Councilor, if you'll just wrap up. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. We respectfully request that the court reverse the decision of the commissioner and render judgment in favor of the school district. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you all. The court will stand in recess, and this case is submitted. Thank you very much. Court will stand in recess. All right.